B62, number 7A.
I feel when we go forward, we lose that whole world of people, of 4 billion people. We lose them. God does not know them, so why should the synonymous term know them? It sounds brutal, but it's truth. You see, people are evil. Huh? People is a funny thing, huh? Not really funny, huh? So why should we have a science that deals with funny people? Because when we have the synonymous term, we think from mind, as mind, and to mind. We never think from mind to people and say, what does it do to people so that the people are better and that comes back to mind. No. In our consciousness, we go out from mind, and all we see is mind expressing itself as what? As mind. For what purpose? For the glory of mind. And the whole question of people and sickness and I don't know what can no more enter our consciousness. It can no more enter. That's what Ellen was asking. Why could Mrs. Eddy do that? She actually didn't heal people. She could not see disease. Yeah, she was in divine sight. She had that altitude of consciousness where she... where mind is only aware of mind, not of a counterfeit. We still think in duality. Huh? We still think about God Almighty, very good, and somewhere a universe that is rotten. There's that terrific duality in us. Huh? But if we go out from mind, just sit on the throne of mind once in your easy chair and everything is quiet around you. Sit in an easy chair and say, here I sit on the throne of grace, on the throne of mind. What do I see if I'm only minded, not Max? What can I see? Can you see people? No. Can you see disease? No. Can you know disease? No. You can't. You can only know yourself. Mind can only know itself. So the question of practice does no more enter there. The practice is that mind practices on itself. Yes?
Max, might not that 7,000-year period usher in the womanhood that would handle the air, like your book of Judges brings out, that's what's accomplished in that period?
Well, yes, well, that book of Judges is wonderful. I have written it.
I'm wondering, because the manhood, the Joshua is the manhood, but the womanhood has to come in to handle the air.
It's a wonderful book. You know, when you have one's time, read it. It's easy to read, huh? But I have given those lectures 30 years ago, now in German, and now it was translated, and I had to publish it again. And so it was the first time again that I really had to go into the various steps in the church. And very seldom something has touched me so much as when I did Joshua and Churches. Because those two books, you see, they are together. They show first Joshua a clean-cut way, how to cross the Jordan and go into the promised land. No opposition, nothing to overcome, just a wonderful, clean consciousness of what man is, to taking possession of our true identity as men. That's Joshua. And the moment you come to Judges, you have to prove it in the face of resistance. Judges is all about fighting the way through in the promised land and kicking all the other people out of the promised land, you see, and cleaning up all those people at the cities in Jericho and I don't know what, so that there is nothing more standing against it. But what Judges shows is so much that the manhood can't do it, that it needs always the woman, because the man fights. He has a counterfeit to fight with. The woman doesn't have. The woman has only the idea. That's the woman of the apocalypse that is actually already there presented, that the woman just knows nothing but its own idea. It's love wedded to its own idea. And if we are wedded to its idea, we cannot know evil. So every time they were in danger, they would go to the woman and said, I'm not going to fight except you, Deborah. You say Deborah?
Huh?
Deborah. Except you, Deborah, come with me. You have to be with me. And then he could fight and win. It's a terrific story. We have to stop here for a long time. Oh, it's about an hour. Actually, I wanted perhaps to start on that text on interpretation, but it's perhaps better we stay with what we were discussing and discuss it a bit further. I have just been asked one or the other question about it, which I think I should deal with right now, because perhaps later on I forget. This is the big question which we have been discussing, that in the 4,000 year period the thought turns from the phenomena, from the outward phenomena, to the idea. It reasons from a broken arm to the arm of the Lord. It reasons from lack of money to the idea of substance and supply. It reasons always that way. Now, this is naturally absolutely unscientific in the highest degree, because we should never go out from a phenomena. The teaching of Christian Science in the textbook is absolutely contrary. It says if we reason from cause to effect, we have to start with the divine mind, and to reason from mind to idea. Therefore, Christian Science treatment does something. Christian Science treatment does the very opposite. It's naturally so that a healing or a treatment comes to our consciousness, either to the patient or to the practitioner, because a inharmony presents itself. That's quite true. You have broken your arm, well, that's that. I mean, it's a phenomenon. But the point is that in science, we put that phenomena behind us and don't reason from that phenomena. We put it behind because we know it's an error, and therefore error can never reveal any truth. Error as such cannot even hint at the truth. It has not the intelligence to do that. And yet Mrs. Eddy says that error by reversal hints to truth. Yes, that's absolutely true. But only if we start from truth. Because error has no intelligence to tell us what is the truth behind it. It's not possible. Error is a lie, and a liar, and the father of it. But it's true that any counterfeit of a fact hints at the fact. That's very true. But in order to find out what the counterfeit is. We don't have to ask the counterfeit. We have to ask truth. Did I put that right? There everybody goes wrong. See? Not everybody. There are a few that don't go wrong. Huh? But that's the general reading into the textbook. Because the textbook, somewhere between two commas, says that error reversed hints to truth. But that's taken out of the whole context. I repeat what I have said so that it's clear. Huh? It's quite true that if there is a fact, that then the counterfeit of that fact hints to that fact. But you have to have first a fact before you have a counterfeit. You can't have a counterfeit before you have a fact about it. So in that way, a counterfeit hints to the truth. That's true. But we cannot reason from the counterfeit to the truth before we don't see what the counterfeit actually is. That the counterfeit is a counterfeit of a fact. And who tells us that? That's only the fact tells us that. Only a truth can tell us what a lie is. The lie says, I'm true. The lie does not say, I'm a lie. But the truth says what a lie is. Therefore, when if you look up, for instance, my booklet on the development of the Christian Science idea and practice, there I have a little chapter on this reversal business. And there I have pointed out that in prose work, Mrs. Eddy shows that the counterfeit is, in the first place, a reversal of a truth, and shows the arguments that reverse it. And then, only then, she said, then you can reverse the reversal and arrive at the truth again. But you first have to know what the reversal is before you know what the truth is about. So, can you see that John Dolly used a very different method? And I don't know if this method is really near to your heart. We have taken it sometimes. It's also in that booklet on the development of the Christian Science idea and practice. And I always see that the students don't read it. Or if they read it, they don't know what is in it. Here you have it in your study aid on page 36. What John Dolly gave as a line of approach to healing, you see? The very first thing he always said was that the practitioner begins his treatment by putting the whole problem, including all the suggestions of that problem, behind him. Behind him. He doesn't look at it, he doesn't listen to it. There is no possibility of reaching a truth by considering error. So instead of reasoning from a broken arm to the arm of the Lord, you put the broken arm behind you, because a broken arm is anyway not the counterfeit of the arm of the Lord, for instance. Or who has said that if we suffer, say, under lack, under not having enough supply, that the reason is because our consciousness is not full with supply? It seems so logic that that would be so, but it isn't. A lack of supply is not the effect of having not the consciousness of supply. Not at all. This is old nomadic thinking. You see? This is not science. Mrs. Eddy never says that. Never. You can go right through the whole textbook. That's not the way of treatment she gives. What is it then? What is then the error? Well, the first thing is to know not to think that we know it, but to put it right behind and forget all about it. Forget what it says it is, forget what the suggestions that are put forward are, just not to give to that whole thing a single thought and put it behind it. And you see, the starting point is already completely different. Then he said, what shall we do? And so he comes to point two and says the practitioner really should turn to the infinite mind. To the infinite mind. Because the textbook says that only the divine mind knows the truth. Only the divine mind. Well, can the divine mind know a broken arm or a lack of supply? He can't. So you see that relationship of the 4,000 year period between phenomena and idea is not scientific. But then you say, well, after all, I must have a solution for that problem. That you need, huh? You need a solution. How can I get the solution if the problem doesn't tell me the truth? So we say, well, in this case, the divine mind must tell me the truth. How can the divine mind talk to me and tell me the truth? So we have point three, the true identity of what is called a problem appears. Now this is a very short cut that we have here, and I explain it more in more detail to you. All right. The patient comes and tells you a lie, a problem. Point one. You turn it away from you, turn it right behind you. He said, I put it right in the corner behind me so that I don't see it and I don't hear it. And I turn in the opposite direction to the divine mind. And now we come to the divine mind reading. So we turn to the divine mind, or let's say we turn to the synonymous terms, to God. And all what we do is that in our consciousness, we fill our consciousness according to our tonality, either with the ideas of mind, and then the ideas of spirit, the ideas of soul, or if our tonality is better, we turn to mind, and we turn to spirit, and we turn to soul, and we turn to the principle of being, and we turn to life, and to truth, and to love. You fill your thought with God. And then comes the difficulty for most students who have not done that. Then they say, but how on earth can that consciousness tell me what the error is? If those seven synonymous terms don't know the error, does not know error. You see, there comes in divine mind reading. The divine mind reading, first let's say state what it is. You know that she deals with the divine mind reading practically only in the fourth chapter of the textbook, in the second part of a chapter on spiritualism, because we have to read really the problem and the situation not spiritualistically but through God. And she says that divine mind reading is really the showing up of the idea that is always good. that the ideas that are good, not evil. So you ask yourself, now I still don't know what the counterfeit is, what the problem, the error really is. Is it really a broken arm, or is it really a lack of supply of money, or what? And that is the point, you see. If you turn at the second point to mind, to spirit and soul, and you get very quiet within you, in that atmosphere where you just see the nature of God as mind and mind's ideas, of spirit and spirit's ideas, and soul's ideas, and you are very quiet within you, and you contemplate that, that's praying, huh? And you contemplate that, something in you gets quiet, gets at rest, becomes definite, and perhaps nothing else, but that happens at first. Doesn't matter. But little by little, as you go over it, and it may not be the first treatment, it may be the second or third treatment, you go over that, but always going out from God. If we reason from God, we reason from cause to effect, and that mind that knows all begins to identify itself somehow. Somehow, I said. In one way or the other. That's the third point. The true identity, the true idea, the identity of what is called the problem appears. So first the fact appears, not the counterfeit. And that is where most students don't trust it. Because they can't quite fathom what that is. They think they are not on solid ground, that they are standing on sand. But they say, if I don't know what appears, if nothing comes to me, so what then? They get irritated. Because they haven't tried out long enough, often enough in their practice, perhaps not even once in their lifetime, because perhaps the first time they tried it, they were not getting an answer, so they said, I can't do it, I'm not there, I don't understand it. Well, that's not the method to do it. Huh? In science, you have to be a sticker, huh? A real sticker. And if what doesn't go in the first play, and not in the second, not in the tenth play, will go in the hundredth time, and it will have to happen. You can't expect that you fall as a master of divine metaphysics from heaven, and you are right that. We have to culture that. You have to culture that over days, over months, over years, and over 10 years, and 20 years, and every time it's better. But I tell you the method, or John Doe tells the method, and it's a terrific method, a pure method, as you can see. So, let's say, suddenly, as you ponder only from the point of view of the synonymous term, you go perhaps through all the synonymous terms, not just to one. You don't pick out one synonymous term. You fill your consciousness with the whole of it. And let that whole God be present within you, be manual in the consciousness. And you just look into the infinitude of those synonymous terms. And be aware that you are not irritated by the problem. That you don't say, but I have to find the answer right now. That you are not irritated by because nothing speaks to you specifically. Don't be irritated. That's wonderful just to be there for the general atmosphere of this synonymous term. But as you do that, you can be sure that somehow something happens. Now, what is that somehow something? That's the point. it can be all sorts of things that can happen. All sorts of things. You see, that consciousness which is pure and is full of the seven synonymous term begins to work in consciousness. And it does not only begin to work in your consciousness, it begins to work in consciousness at per se, in the world. And what can come out can be all sorts of things. I just say a few things, but don't say that that's the way it has then to come to you. Naturally, the most beautiful thing is usually if suddenly a specific idea begins to crystallize in your thought. And something begins to say, it is this specific truth. That's the most beautiful part of it, naturally. But it needs a culture. And I can't say that I can catch that every time, no. But it's wonderful to see that you, in that peace of consciousness, something begins to crystallize. You know what I mean with crystallize? See, a specific idea of all this wonderful universal truth begins to speak to you, or comes to your mind, and says, you know, this is the idea. But it doesn't need to come that way. There are some people, perhaps, who hear something. I never heard it. I always see. I'm a funny one. But it doesn't need to come that, like the writing on the wall where you can see it in golden letters. It can come without that you notice it. Namely, it can come so that suddenly something in the patient changes. That something happens, say, with the pain, with the problem. That something moves, because that problem will not stay put, stagnant. We live in a dynamic universe, and suddenly something begins to change and change and change, and you say, oh, that's it, huh? That's one, another way. Another way can be, which happens so often, that you have given your treatment and you left it in the trust of God, that it is established in consciousness, that it's an idea established, that nothing can destroy it anymore, that nothing can deface it anymore, and that it is operating. And you leave it at that. And perhaps through a coincidence, or through reading something, or through association of thought, or whatever, you suddenly, something springs up. You may be in the car, you may be at work, you may be doing something in the kitchen, something suddenly makes that, and says, So don't limit in any way the way that specific idea can come to you. That's the art. That's the art of it. Not to have a predetermined notion how the answer should come. But we know that it comes the moment within us everything is pure. It can only be pure if we have no human conceptions about it. If we know that only God is working. So that is that point three, that suddenly the identity of what is called the problem, the truth, the specific truth of what is called the problem, does appear.